Well, good evening, everyone. This is what we're studying. This is called Mushu Toku Mind. So already it sounds very mysterious, but it's really quite mysterious, actually. We have gotten to what he's calling the text of the sutra. He started out with the introduction, which is Avalokiteshvara, when practicing deeply the Prajnaparamita, which is what we've just been doing, wisdom, perceive that all five skandhas, all the things that go together to make us up, are empty, are completely transparent and coming and going, and you can't put your finger on it. Empty doesn't mean empty. It means interconnected with everything in a way that you can't even tell. It's so big. So seeing all things that are empty, she talked to Shariputra, who is Buddha's best disciple, and told him the whole story of the Heart Sutra. Form does not differ from emptiness. So this form that we are is also, if you thought about the atoms it's made up of, you can think of what emptiness is. It's just a bunch of atoms that came into being as a very small thing and got big and got old and then got just like we are now, and is coming and going all the time. We can't even really talk about it without using all kinds of images. Dogen has a whole fascicle about mountains and rivers, describing the human body as mountains and rivers. You can see how that would be a kind of, it's so vast and so constantly in action, changing all the time. So now we've got to chapter 5, which is he's going to start going through the words that we just chanted. Kanji Zai Bosatsu, that's Avalokiteshvara. Gyojin Hanyaharamita Ji. Hanyaharamita is prajna. Shoken go on kai ku do isai ku yaku. So he says most sutras consist of a prologue, a body of text, and an appendix explaining how to practice the sutra. But with this one, the body of the text constitutes almost the whole of the sutra. So they usually name the disciple who's involved and the date and the location. But the Hanya Shingyo doesn't have any of that. We don't know who was there or who was what it was about. In Tibetan practice, it does give us that. It's a whole scene with Buddha sitting on top of a mountain and many, many disciples, and it describes it in a long, long paragraph before it begins. But in Zen, I don't know why, I guess because we're so austere, we don't do it that way. So it's not Kanji Zai Bosatsu is not only Avalokiteshvara, but it could be meaning looking or freedom. Bodhisattva, Bosatsu is a bodhisattva, the living Buddha, the Buddha who stays on the earth and stays with people rather than going off into some heavenly realm. Kanji Zoe Bodhatsu is a personification of compassion. It's a made-up image, but you see it everywhere. You see it all over Japan. It's shown with many arms, and in every hand of the arms there is an instrument, a wrench, a scalpel, a carrot, a bowl of soup, a saw, anything you can think of. And they're beautiful. They're beautifully, beautifully made. And Avalokiteshvara is the compassionate one who, when you call out for help, immediately comes with the right thing to use to help you. It's a wonderful metaphor for how much we are helped in spite of our not realizing it many times. If we really ask for help, it almost always comes. And Avalokiteshvara is the personification of that. So we know it as canon in Japan, and see, but it's the same thing. Avalokiteshvara is doesn't really, I guess it has two genders, one side and the other, but in canon is feminine, and is very much appreciated in Japan, especially, and also in Vietnam. I know several people who were boat people in escaping from Vietnam, and prayed to Canon, and were saved from the pirates and the dreadful things that they went through. And are quite convinced, very sure, that that's how they managed to survive when many, many people didn't. So it's that kind of image, that kind of metaphor. So the many arms, the thousand-armed Panon, whose arms signify the manifold power of her compassion, is extended to all infinite forms of existence. So Gyojin is practicing. Hanya Haramita is Prajna Paramita, great wisdom arising from sitting itself. That's why Dogen always said that we sitting are Buddha itself. That's why there's no Buddha on the altar. That's Manjushri, that's another bodhisattva who cuts through the foolishness that goes on in our mind with the sword. Very helpful. But we don't have a Buddha. Each one of us is Buddha itself, Buddha wisdom. So then it goes on to talk about the five kinds of practice that there are. The high ideals of wisdom are the five kinds of practice. And we know those as the paramitas, giving, and the precepts, and effort and patience and meditation and wisdom. So all of those are running through what we call wisdom. It's what it takes to not fall off the cushion, not get up and walk out the door. It's what keeps us holding fast to practice. So Shoken Go on Kaiku means shining, an inward gaze which leads to self-knowledge. So that's what perceives means. It's shining, that step forward back that Dogen talks about. That in every tradition, there's always the idea that in us is a light. And this is the shining of that leading to self-knowledge. And it's seeing that all five aggregates, all the things that make us up, form, feeling, perception, impulses, and consciousness, are empty. Kai Ku is empty. There's Ku all the way through, if you notice. Ku, Ku, Ku. So Hanya Shingyo puts great emphasis on the elements at the root of action, without which the phenomenal world would not appear. That's really important, the action itself, the moving of all things, from the smallest, every even very smallest thing is moving. And every largest thing is moving also. As Dogen says, the mountains are walking. Even the mountains are walking. We just don't notice it, just like we can't see the atoms that are moving around in our body. Everything is moving. Everything is changing. Through the five senses and consciousness arise discrimination and judgment and error. So we try to understand, and everything is so big and so complicated that we can't possibly understand everything. We can't even understand more than this much. When we're trying and trying to have more knowledge, remember that even the most knowledge you can possibly have isn't nearly what there is to know. It's infinite, really. So the five skandhas make up together the life of both the body and mind of all living beings. Bound by the world of phenomena and the forces of desire, including the ego. So what keeps us going is what we want or don't want, which is the other side of wanting. And then we say there are five desires: the desire for food, sleep, sex, shelter, and being known by others. Food, sleep, sex, shelter, being known by others. That's us. The trick is that all of them are survival elements. We have to have all of those. We do have all of those, but Our suffering arises when we want more. We want more food, more sleep, etc., etc. And it can become a huge problem and a tremendous amount of suffering that goes along with it. He says, living beings don't possess their own essential nature. Everything is impermanent and in a state of constant change. The five aggregates don't have their own substance. This is why we say go on kai ku. In other words, the five skandhas are ku. All form, feeling, perception, impulses, consciousness, they're all ku. Empty, changing, impermanent. Their only substance is emptiness. Nothing exists in and of itself. Everything is the product of interdependence. So sometimes this notion of ku, of emptiness, can make you a little bit dizzy. It sounds like there's a kind of nothing. It's the opposite. It's everything. It's how everything is a part of everything. You have to think how it works. The best example is a very ancient one of a wagon. Somewhere it's described a beautiful wagon with. But what happens if you take off the seat on a wagon? Still a wagon. If you take off a wheel, it's still a wagon. But you start taking it all apart and pretty soon it's just a pile of lumber. That's true of everything. So it's all put together and all take apartable. And so it makes things not so serious in a way. It's not so solid. But in a wonderful way, because it means that there's more. Whatever is happening that seems to be undoing is also doing at the same time. Coming apart and coming together. Falling off the rose bush, turning into mush, making a new rose, growing up, falling apart. It goes on and on. So we don't have to take it so seriously, although it's a very, very serious matter. It's both. Beings exist, he says, and our consciousness can observe them. But they are continually evolving and transforming. Nothing exists in and of itself. Everything is the product of interdependence. So even knowing our friends, we see how they change. It isn't a spacey thing at all. It's just that we keep changing all the time. You know, we gain weight, we lose weight, we're young and then we get older, and it's quite amazing, and sometimes we're in a terrible state, and then we see our friend again, and she's just alive with light, and it's wonderful. It comes and goes, all of it. We come and go in this wonderful way. So we pass people on the sidewalk, and we see where they are right now. But if we see them again another day, they would be different. And we would too. So life is extremely interesting that way. Very, very interesting. If we're paying attention to what's happening, it's really cool. Always there's something going on. He tells the story of a king who said, the world is vast, to his dear wife, but Do you think that you love anyone more than yourself? And she said, I would like to say that I love you more than myself, but actually I think I love myself more. The king answered, it's true. I too am more important than anyone else in my own eyes. They spoke the truth, says Deshi Maru. We all love ourselves and sink into egotism and narcissism. In this way, we forget that our actions disturb other people. Egotism is a great koan, he says, and to abandon it is very difficult. It's only within ku, in the infinite, in the total abandonment of the self, that the highest realization may be found. How do we do this? How do we find this supreme happiness and ultimate wisdom? We find it in Zazen, he says. He said, people who desire happiness must suffer. If we're able to be content with simple happiness, suffering disappears. This is Satori. This is enlightenment, being satisfied. That's what Buddha said. The history of humanity is the history of suffering. We're born, we suffer, and we die. But simple happiness means every moment is exactly what it is. And we, in our moments, are connected to everything that's happening. So the last thing is do e sai ku yaku. Another ku is the way to save all suffering and unfortunate beings. Do means to help or to save. Isai means all things. Ku in this sense is suffering, and yaku is misfortune. So all human beings can be happy and enjoy eternal life if their mind is musho toku, free of all pursuit of profit, free of trying to get somewhere and to get something. Human beings look for happiness erroneously. They continually grasp at things, trying to satisfy their desires, believing that in so doing they will achieve happiness. Yet happiness doesn't arise from what we receive, but from what we give. We all know that. It's such a wonderful feeling. We all know it. And we forget it over and over and over again. If we're detached, desires are insatiable and dissatisfaction perpetual. This is how we are. This isn't saying we shouldn't be like this because we are like this. It's not trying to shame us. It's our human nature. But if we are detached from our desires and forget our quest for happiness, the path of obtaining, if we leave the path of trying to get somewhere, then suddenly it's a lot easier. Mushu toku mind will bring us closer to authentic happiness. The total gift of oneself, the abandonment of the ego, merges our being with supreme happiness. To understand this is to have the wisdom of Hanya Haramita, of great wisdom. So that's chapter 5. It's a little bit confusing because these words are all not English words, but they're the words that we chant, and so it's helpful, I think, to give ourselves some flavor of the way it's the way it comes out of us as we chant. Kanji zai bo zatsu gyo jin hanya haramita, etc. It becomes, as we chant it every week, it just becomes a part of us. So they're time for one, introductions, because I forgot them, and then questions.
No. Mary? John?
Roman?
Leslie? Nico?
Stefan? Jeffrey?
Kevin? Mm-hmm.
Wendy?
Violet?
Have you been here before?
I have, yes.
You
couple
have.
Of times, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, my third time here.
Yeah. Good.
And I do have a question about the cover of the book, the Mukku Choku Mind.
Yes.
What does that mean?
It's the mind of not desiring anything.
Okay.
Or being satisfied with what you have. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, in the book actually you talked about suffering, and so don't you think that suffering has a direct connection to the fear? And because original human being, it didn't have any fear, right? In this world right now, we have so much fear and we cannot take steps. The fear to talk, the fear to fail, the fear to whatever. There's every corner there's a fear. Well, do you have anything to talk about fear? Anything you can say?
Oh, there's so much anxiety now.
Right.
Everybody's feeling it.
Yeah. Why the world's going towards the fear? So
yes.
Yes. If there's no fear, you can live, you can live like peaceful life,
Well, that's what it says in the sutra, actually.
Right.
It says, depending on prajna paramita, no fears exist.
Exactly.
Depend on wisdom. That if you don't desire anything and you just depend on your own true wisdom, your own internal smart nature, that you won't be afraid whatever happens. I think ancient people were afraid of the tigers that were lurking in the, behind the rocks. Yeah, it was pretty scary life too.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think you can just, it's not even a matter of bravery, it's just a matter of insight.
Correct.
Of seeing more clearly how things are. So it's not so, it doesn't seem so tremendously shaky.
Right. Another thing you talked about, the vast ocean inside us, the vast mountains. Does anything exist outside or everything is inside?
It's both.
It's both.
You can't say.
Right. Because the science is everything's you see, it's an illusion. I mean, illusion in a different way.
Yes.
But everything's we create.
Yes.
If I'm seeing you, I'm giving you the importance to see you. That's why you exist. If I don't see you,
you
don't have existence.
That's right.
Right. So.
Yes, and vice versa.
Right.
And the real magic in human life is because we have this ability to perceive deeply that if we see each other at the same time, something happens.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It is amazing. John?
My friend is just completing moving his household where he lived for 30 years.
Oh.
He's moving all the way up to Oregon.
Oh.
artist, a very prolific artist. So their house, every wall, every surface is artistic. It's things that she has created.
Yes.
And she has a nice studio that he built for her, full of objects of art, and they're all very, very creatively done. She teaches art, and she's quite good. Now he's faced with having to move all of this stuff, and he's suffering under the burden of doing that. She's suffering under the burden of having to select what to leave behind.
Yes.
To get rid of.
Yes.
And that's it just struck me as a vivid illustration of this latter part of this chapter.
Yes.
Referring to the more we receive, the more we demand. It creeps up on us. It happens.
It does.
It just happens.
It's horrible. It's like a nightmare. Yeah. It's true. And there's a joy in just giving everything away. St. Francis did that to his father's horror. St. Bridget did too. In fact, she gave her father's shoes away and he made her stop. So you can go too far, but actually the giving part is joyful. They could, in old age, I think we just end up making donation after donation. Here, take this. It's none of it has the same quality or value anymore.
Because we made it too complicated.
Yes.
Like, our language got so complicated. Like, and we got trapped right in it.
Oh, of course we do. Of course. Roman?
Andy, would you say that deeply practicing Prajna Paramita in my personal life would be sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Would be zazen.
That's what it is.
Okay. I was picturing it as kind of clearing the way to some sort of wisdom. You know, by sitting, facing the wall, and I think facing myself, type of, that.
Right. Well, Kodo Sawaki said the best thing about zazen. He said it's good for nothing. So don't make any kind of special effort. The more special effort you make, the more you're actually desiring more and trying to get somewhere. And you're already there. So the best part of sitting is just to accept that you're already there and enjoy it. Just breathe with it. That's the best. Violet?
Angie, you spoke about the mountains and rivers as the body. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Well, it's not my theory, and I never read that in the same way that Okamura has done. But what Okamura says is that the mountains are representing the physical aspects of life that are always constantly changing and moving. Even though the mountains look solid, that they're, and we know they're not. I mean, they have fire inside, their rocks are falling all the time. And the rivers are, he says, everything is made of water. Human body is made of water mostly, and everything else is too, and that there are oceans, which I didn't know, in this, under the earth, bigger than the oceans that are on top of the earth. That's what he says in his book. I need to see more about that. Mm-hmm. And that all is that the oceans are all running, or the rivers are all our life running through us constantly. So, of course, our blood is running and everything is, we're hydrating ourselves continually, being good. So it's important. And it's a kind of way of seeing how we're all connected with the earth and everything that comes out of the sky and goes back up again. It's all, you know, all of that's connected too, in a beautiful way, really. It's 8 o'clock, so we stop. We have Seigaki.
Right, yes, that's coming up the 27th. I'll be sending out a notice about it, but please let me know if you're interested in helping. We could use someone to set the table with, I don't know if you want paper plates or not, but anyway, set the table, maybe some decor, someone to gather names that people submit, if anyone would be interested in leading the chants. And then the food drive, someone to transport our collection to Second Harvest. So, and tomorrow night, Angie's going to be here again. You didn't get enough of her tonight. She'll be here with the Insight Group, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be at 7:30, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Okay, so I don't know that you all know what the Seigaki is, but it's a feast for the hungry ghosts who all through the year are really, really hungry because they have a very tiny throat and a very big mouth and a very big belly, and they just can't get enough to eat ever. And so once a year, because somebody's mother ended up down there, this is a very odd Buddhist story, this ceremony was invented to create a beautiful, beautiful table with a cake and lots of food, and then open the gates, the gates to where the Seigakis live, and offer to feed them, and so give them the cake and give them, and then we recite the names of people who have passed away during the year, which is and then we chant a couple of beautiful poetic things about our practice and about practice itself. It's very hard to say about it because it's our version of Halloween, really. It brings up the other side because they say at Halloween time the border between that world and this world is very, very thin. And so we can actually open the gate and encounter the other side. And then when it's over, when we finished our chanting, then we close the gate. We fed them and wish them well and hope they take up the practice because it's so good. And then we eat what's on the table. And we've brought all kinds of food, pastas and canned goods and all kinds of things to take to Second Harvest. So we end up feeding people in reality as well. So it's, I think it's pretty cool actually. So if you're able to help setting up the table and taking the food to the Second Harvest,
Baking a cake.
Baking
that.
A cake, right. We need a cake. Right. So we've got a couple of weeks, but we need to think about it now and make a plan. And somebody needs to chant the name, collect the names. I've been collecting the names. Leonard Cohen is one of them. I've just been writing down all the people that I cared about who have passed away this year, personally and just in general. So that's always a very sweet thing to hear those names again. So, 1 minute sit.